The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
What does it mean that man is made in God's image? And though fallen, do we still carry or reflect the image of God? A couple of questions we will consider today here on Grace in Focus. Glad you are joining us, friend. And this is a ministry of the Grace Evangelical Society. Our website is faithalone.org. There you can find out a lot about us, and you can get information about our free online seminary where you can earn an MDiv degree, about our subscription-free magazine, also called Grace in Focus, published 6 times per year. You can read and research many of the hundreds of articles we have there, and there's also a bookstore. Come visit us today at faithalone.org. And now for today's question and answer discussion, here's Bob Wilkin along with Sam Marr.
And we have a question from Ruth. It's about what theologians call the Imago Dei, which is Latin for the image of God.
She asked, Genesis 5:1 says Adam was made in the likeness of God, but then verse 3 says Adam had a son in his own likeness. Why did the wording change? Does this mean man is not in God's image?
So first of all, no, it doesn't mean man is not in God's image. Now, there are some people who argue that when Adam and Eve sinned, they destroyed the image of God. But the more orthodox position is that the image of God was marred but not destroyed. What does it say in 5:1?
Yeah, Genesis 5:1 says, "This is the book of the genealogy of Adam. In the day that God created man, he made him in the likeness of God." And then verse 3, "And Adam lived 130 years and begot a son in his own likeness, and after his image named him Seth."
Okay, so I would put it this way, that the exact opposite is true. Because Adam was made in the likeness of God, and Adam's son is in his likeness, therefore Adam's son Seth is also in the image of God. That would mean that all the descendants of Adam still carry the Imago Dei, the image of God. And there are several verses that suggest this. Genesis chapter 9, after the flood, God's talking to Noah, and what is it, verse 6?
Verse 6, "Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed, for in the image of God he made man."
So notice this is after the fall, and it's saying in the image of God he created man. Now you could argue, well, yeah, that was true in the past, but then why the death penalty if man is no longer in the image of God? There's also a couple of verses in the New Testament. James 3:9.
Yep, James 3:9.
And the King James has an odd word, similitude, which I can't remember the last time in my life I used similitude. But most translations, I think, say likeness. But what does it say in the New King James?
He's talking about the tongue and guarding your tongue. So it starts with it being the tongue. "We bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude or in the likeness of God."
Okay, so we have that verse. If you look at Colossians 1:15, I believe it also speaks of the fact that Jesus is in the exact image of the Father.
Yeah, verse 15 says, "He," being Jesus, "is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation."
Hebrews also has a reference to that he's the exact image or the exact likeness of the Father. So Jesus is an exact representation or exact image. That's why Jesus could tell Philip, "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." Mm-hmm. But we are not. But we are still in the image of God. And that's why even unbelievers do some good things. Even unbelievers manifest, for example, creativity, which is, I think, part of the image of God. Part of the image of God are his communicable attributes. You know, some of his attributes he can't communicate to us, like omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent. But things like love or things mm-hmm. like goodness or those sorts of things, he can communicate to us to a limited degree, and we will fully have that when we are glorified.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of Christians say that a mother's love for a newborn child or something is the closest thing we have to God's love for us,
yeah.
And that transcends Christianity. You know, you don't
right.
have to be a believer to love your child.
Yeah.
So that's definitely an example of that. I had a question to go back to the Genesis 5:3. So, because what you were saying, I think, is probably the best explanation for why verse 3 says, and he begot a son in his own image. And it's not to say that's contrary to the image of God, but because Adam was made in the image of God, his son was therefore made in God's image as well. But does that mean that it's diluted every time? If it, you know, Adam was the closest and then Seth is a little bit less and then a little less and a little less until we're far from the image of God? Or is that a skewed understanding?
Yeah, I think that's a skewed understanding, but I do think there's a part of that which is correct. Our friend Jeff Stevens, who worked for Answers in Genesis for a number of years and has a science background and also a master of theology from Dallas Seminary, he thinks that Adam and Eve were probably the smartest people that ever lived. They probably had the highest IQ. They were the top of the gene pool because the gene pool would start to degrade over time. And you would start having mutations and things, which is why you would get genetic flaws eventually. And I think that's correct. But in terms of the image of God, I'm not so sure we can say that the first few generations were more reflective of the image of God than later generations. For example, Abraham's called God's friend. David's called a man after God's own heart. Moses is God's servant. So there are people in the Old Testament who seem to stand out as being especially good at reflecting the image of God, more than the average person. But I would think probably Adam and Eve were very godly people.
It's coming. It'll be here before you know it. What am I talking about? The Grace Evangelical Society's National Conference 2026. May 18th through the 21st at Camp Copus, an absolutely beautiful campground in North Texas, right on the lake with lots of recreation, great food, a great place to stay, wonderful fellowship, and wonderful free grace Bible teaching. Information and online registration now at faithalone.org/events. First-timers waive registration fees. faithalone.org/events.
So I think Ruth asked a second question. I think we have time.
Yeah, Ruth asked another question. She asks, is Romans 5:12 and then verses 14 and verse 17, are they speaking of physical death?
Okay, so what does 5:12, 14, and 17 say?
12 is, therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men because all sinned. For until the law, sin was in the world, but sin was not imputed when there is no law. Nevertheless, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even over those who had not sinned according to the likeness of the transgression of Adam, who was a type of him who was to come. And skipping to 17, for if by the one man's offense death reigned through the one, much more those who receive abundance of grace and of the gift of righteousness will reign in life through the one, Jesus Christ.
So, yes, Ruth, I would say that all those refer to physical death. This passage, 5:12 through 21, is a pivotal passage concerning something called federal headship. Federal headship is the Calvinist view that God elected in eternity past those who would have everlasting life, and everybody else he either elected for the lake of fire or he simply bypassed, meaning they're going to the lake of fire anyway. So there's not much difference between double predestination or single predestination. Anyway, Calvinists look at verse 12 and it says, therefore, just as through one man sin entered the world and death through sin, and thus death spread to all men because all sinned. They say all sinned in Adam. So they say when Adam sinned, he was like our senator. He was like our congressman. He represented all of his race. And so when he sinned, we all sinned. And so according to the Calvinist view, if you or I or anyone lived an absolutely sinless life, they would still be condemned to the lake of fire because they sinned in Adam. And so without any individual sin, and that's how they understand verse 12, because all sinned. Now, there was an article in the Journal of the Evangelical Society, I think it was by Bassinger, and it was around 2000, in which he argued that this passage was about physical death and about the fact that all sinned themselves. In other words, remember Romans 23, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God? Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean all sinned in Adam. That means all sinned in this life. And present tense, continue to sin, continue to fall short of the glory of God. And so I like his argument. I think he's correct. And the issue here is the reason we die is because sin entered the human race. Remember God said in Genesis 2:17, in the day you eat of it, you shall surely die. Mm-hmm. Well, what that means is mortality began the moment they ate of the forbidden fruit. Yeah. It took them a long time to die physically in their life, but they started dying that day.
Well, and death, it says in verse 12 that sin entered the world and death. So sin and death entered the world, not just humanity, but plants, animals, the world itself. Because of that, they put the clock of mortality on the whole planet, not just on humanity.
Yeah, no, I agree, at least as far as the animals. It appears animals wouldn't have died. It appears that humans obviously wouldn't have died. I'm not sure about plants. But in any regard, the other flaw with this approach is John 1:29 says, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." No one is condemned because of their sin. Mm-hmm. If you look at Revelation 20:11-15, the great white throne judgment, people are sent to the lake of fire not because of what is in the books of deeds, but because they're not found written in the book of life. That is because they never believed in Christ. So the idea that people are condemned to hell forever because they sinned in Adam is wrong on so many fronts. First of all, even if we did sin in Adam, the blood of Christ covers that. But secondly, that's not what happened. What this passage is saying is Adam passed on to his sons and his daughters a sin nature. And then the father, every generation, passes on a sin nature to their children. And so the reason we all sin is because we inherit what some people have called the OSN, the old sin nature. So, yeah, I would encourage you to study this passage more. But, Ruth, thank you for this question and the earlier question about the image of God. They're both things which we should study and be conversant in because they come up a lot in the New Testament. By the way, one final point on this, the wages of sin is death. That occurs in the Old and New Testament, and that's essentially what 5:12-21 is explaining. Well, thanks so much. And Sam, let's
keep grace
in focus.
Be our guest and subscribe to our 48-page magazine, 6 issues per year, also called Grace in Focus. It's free by emailing your name and snail mail address to ges@faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. Maybe you've got a question or comment or feedback. If so, please send us a message. Here's our email address. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. And when you do, please make sure your question is as succinct and clear as possible. That would be a great big help. On our next episode, should evangelism be our one primary focus in life? Let's talk about it next time, and until then, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.